90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Native Spirit Radio. Although you probably might not be able to tell because of the music, I forgot my. I don't know where my intro song is at. It's somewhere, and I cannot find it. So I have this. I thought it was supposed to be flute music, but it's not. Oh, there it goes. There's the flute music. I was like, why does this sound like an orchestra? Classical times at KKFI. All right, so you're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Rhonda, your host, for the next hour. And we have Maury in the studio with us as well.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, so it's exciting. And Maury is going to be moving. So I think this is your last time, right?
Yeah.
It'll be your last time, so.
Yeah, this will be my last time here. Yes. I'll be moving in the next couple of days.
Yeah, so, but we'll still call you.
Oh, okay.
And make you talk for the Lakota Nation.
There we go. I can do that.
But yeah, so, I lost my intro music, so I don't know where it's at. And sorry for this music. It's not the usual hardcore stuff I usually play. I felt really bad. I'm like, oh my gosh, I thought this was going to be flute music off the bat, but it sounds like classical. Can you hear it?
Yeah, it's really nice and soothing.
On a nice gray day today. I don't want to put anyone to sleep. I know, because it's a gray day and it's like, oh, this is very relaxing. Relaxing, all right. So I'll do your news at 5:30, so make sure you tune into that. Just catching you up on a lot of things that have been going on across Indian country, and of course, things that have a really big impact on us as well, because of the Department of Interior affects everything within the BIE or BIA, and it affects us locally with IHSs, and of course, at Haskell as well. So I'm talking about some of the things going on with that. And, of course, the health care skinny repeal act didn't go through. You know, I know a lot of people were really worried about that and watching it. And I was just watching it on Twitter. You know, just tons of people tweeting, just, you know, making sure their voices was heard. And I often wonder, like, what would it have been like 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. You know, like, would people have taken much a participation stance in this if we didn't have social media, mm-hmm. or even know about it? I mean, it's kind of interesting to see how big of an impact social media is having on politics.
Yeah. I mean, that's my main source of getting my news. I no longer watch television pretty much, or the news, and so that's pretty much my main source. So I kind of go through all my social media pages, and kind of that's where I get my info.
Definitely. Yeah. So, and it's interesting to see both parts of it. You know, you have people who are arguing for on both sides of it. It's always interesting to see different perspectives of what is going on. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, for us as Native people, you know, the impact on reservations, that we see that because those are people we know, our families, mm-hmm. that are affected through what happens through healthcare, immediate impacts. And the one thing that I've noticed with, you know, the Affordable Care Act is that because they've been getting money back through Medicaid, put back into IHS, that's how they've been able to survive. And mm-hmm. so that's like a really good thing that I've seen come out of it.
Yeah.
The positive part of it. So, yeah, so it's interesting to see where we'll go from here next. Mm-hmm. John McCain, I think a lot of people felt he was a friend of Indian country, and then they got upset because he was like, he's going to vote for it.
Yeah.
And then come down to the very end, and he didn't.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that surprised a lot of people.
I know. It was interesting. But it wasn't just him. It was the two women. Mm-hmm. Again.
Oh, three. Yeah. I saw three today on Twitter where there's three women that were specifically, they were Republican, and they actually voted against it.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, women are, you know, paving the way, too, mm-hmm. as well, making sure their voice is heard. So, yeah, it's interesting. Interesting week we had this week. So, last week, I'm sorry I wasn't here last Sunday. And just kind of, you know, as a remembrance, we lost a very good friend of ours. And it was very hard on us last Saturday. And I could not be here Sunday. I just couldn't do it. And I contacted, you know, the station and said, you know, I can't be here. But thankfully, we have people who are willing to be here and take our place. And in these times of, you know, tragedy that we experience. But our friend, his name's Nate Cleveland, and he was a worker at Haskell. He wasn't just a coworker; he was such a really great friend of ours, me and Maury. And it's been difficult. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just want to have play something in remembrance of him because he is, you know, we know he's still around us mm-hmm. and still here. You know, we appreciate his kindness, and he was a really great worker at Haskell. He worked in the admissions, he worked under the vice president of academics, and then he went over to the registrar, where he was in contact with a lot of people, a lot of students. And one of the things they always talk about is how nice he was, which can be difficult mm-hmm. when you're in a customer service oriented job. Sometimes it can get hectic and stressful. And so, you know, a lot of people always talked about how it was nice to have somebody who could connect with the students and treat them with respect. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, our students really, really appreciate it. And they're going to miss that. You know, he's not there. And as for me as a coworker, I almost saw him every day. And it was like, I'd come in and bother him and he'd joke around with me. Like, he would always joke about the people ask for transcripts. And they expect to get the transcripts right away. And, you know, it takes 24 hours to get it done, you know, pull them out, whatever. And so I joke around. I come walking in. I'd be like, sir, I need to get my transcript. And he's like, miss, you're going to have to go to the archives in Lenexa. Right. And he would just joke around like, I'm like, whatever, not that old. I graduated in 95. It's not that long ago. But, you know, it was funny because he always used to have this sense of humor and make people laugh about stupid stuff like that. But anyway, you know, I feel bad for our friends here that are upset and they couldn't go back to his funeral. He was buried yesterday on his reservation in New Mexico, Arizona border area, mm-hmm. Fort Defiance, Arizona. It's like right on the border. We did have some friends who went down there to be with the family, and you know, I know it's still difficult for people here, but you know, we're all in this boat together, mm-hmm. and you know, we'll get through this time. I know it's going to take some time, but you know, we're going to remember the good things about Nate, you know, and happiness he brought to us. I don't know if you wanted to say anything, Maury.
You know, I've been on autopilot, you know, all week, and I just haven't been able to do anything. I haven't been able to think of anything else. I really think about his family, his mom, dad, sister. He had three nieces. I just wanted everyone just to say a prayer for them, just, you know, to help with the healing process. But Nate, he was unique, you know, and he touched so many people's lives. And it's just hard to think that he's not going to be here. It's just almost unbelievable. I mean, he was so young. It was a shock.
Yeah, it was just difficult. Just,
it's difficult times. And, you know, and I'm so grateful for all our friends that were around to help me out. You just never realize, and you think you may be alone, but you're surrounded, you know, by friends and family, and so that's one thing I was grateful for.
Definitely, and that's it. And we talk about that Haskell family, mm-hmm. you know, like
yeah.
And I think one of our friends brought it up about we're so far away from our families. Like, you're far away from South Dakota. Mm-hmm. I'm far away from New Mexico. He was far away from Arizona. And we developed these family type relationships, mm-hmm. even though we may not be from the same tribes. You know, you're yeah. Lakota, I'm Pueblo, and he was Navajo. Mm-hmm. Navajo, Pueblo, we're enemies. We always make fun of each other. But we developed these familial relationships mm-hmm. where, like, you know, we were, like, very, very close. And with that Haskell family, and they really, at this time, pulled together. I really appreciated our Haskell family coming together and supporting their family. Like you said, he was so close to his nieces, helping them out, wanting them to succeed and to go into higher education. You know, he got his master's degree from KU, and you know, he wanted them to succeed. And it's really awesome that he, you know, was a good mentor for them in that regard. But it was our family here, are not our real family, but it's our Haskell family, and mm-hmm. they came together and really made sure that we had a support system to make sure we could make it through this yeah. this time. And yeah, thank you to all those people who helped out and who helped his family mm-hmm. as well with a monetary donation, which they needed help as well. But yeah, we really appreciate that. But we wanted to play a song for Nate, and he liked Indigenous. And, you know, Indigenous came to Lawrence a lot, so we wanted to play the song in memory of Nate and, you know, just still keep his family in prayers and thoughts, because they're still going through this, mm-hmm. you know, and it's still very difficult for them. So this is Indigenous and Things We Do. Thank you.
Bye. live the old way, and it was fun days for me growing up.
Aloha, mahine hawaii vau,
tasana hohino puhu.
Because, you know, we're talking for the future generations.
I'm Conroy Chino, introducing you to Living Voices, profiles of Native Americans and Native Hawaiians today. Accomplished UPAC scholar Oscar Kawagli is an advocate for the preservation of Native knowledge. He is co-director of an Alaskan educational initiative funded by the National Science Foundation to develop a unique Native curriculum. He also seems to be living up to the name his grandmother gave him.
My very first name that was given to me by my grandmother was Angayukak, which is an ancestral name. And it could mean parent, or it could mean leader or chief, depending on how you use it. And apparently my parents liked a Scandinavian trader downriver from Bethel. His name was Oscar Samuelson. So that's how I got Angayukak Oscar Kawagli. The first 7 years I was taught in a traditional way. My grandmother, who raised me, taught me the UPAC language every day. And my education was based upon the seasons. And a lot of things that I learned was by observation. And then you repeated whatever the task required. I majored in biological sciences, have a minor in military science and tactics, and a major also in education. And I have a PhD from University of British Columbia, 3 degrees from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This modern education brought me new knowledge and new doorways opened to new experiences, though it turned me away from my own UPAC worldview. The realization came about as I was working on my dissertation. I had turned my back on my UPAC language and my UPAC life ways and was trying to be something that I was not. I kept saying, goodness gracious, you know, my UPAC language, I'm depending on it right now. Why in the world did I consider it to be useless? I'm so keenly interested in worldviews and have been very interested in the UPAC worldview, which I think is an intersection of the cosmology, how we perceive the world to be, and the epistemology, how we get to know. So the Western ways of knowing give us a lot of detailed knowledge as well as breadth and depth of knowledge. Whereas in this, the Native way, we learn from the University of Nature or the University of the Universe what life and making a living should be all about. We believe that we are participants in this universe. We are participants on this Mother Earth, and it is always changing. It is always in a state of flux. I consider myself in the business of education, and really would like to be associated with Alaska Native Studies, because Native people are very much aware of their place. And especially the elders and the older people know place very intimately. And we must be able to use our own native language in order to know about place, because within those words are our thought world, our worldview. And Western ways of knowing seem to be approaching our holistic, qualitative ways of knowing. Look at the science of chaos, fractal geometry. Those new sciences seem to corroborate and verify this holistic approach that I, as a Native person, subscribe to.
This interview with Oscar Kawagli was conducted by Lisa Bush. Living Voices is a project of the Smithsonian Institution, National Museum of the American Indian. Executive producers Kevin Lewis and Elizabeth Weatherford. Project coordinator Nan Rubin. Writers Peggy Berryhill and Ginger Miles, mixed at Mercer Street Sound. For more information, check out our website at www.si.edu/nmai. For Living Voices, I'm Conroy Chino.
Welcome to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Rhonda, your host here for this next hour. And you were just listening to that interview with Mr. Oscar Quagley off the Living Voices CD. And he was just so intelligent and smart. I'm just so lucky I was able to meet him. He came out to Haskell many times to do talks on climate change in Alaska, and just such a wonderful person and just full of knowledge. Just really honored to have met him. I don't know, did you have a chance to meet him with one of the climate? Yeah, he was so smart. I mean, I just loved interviewing him because he was just full of information. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you could sit down and just record everything this man has to say. Before that was Cree Confederation with Beautiful Flower. And then we had Jay Begay in Beauty We Walk. And we started off with some Indigenous with Things We Do. All right, we're doing your news across Indian country, letting you know what's going on. Well, we've had a shakeup in Department of Interior and a lot of reassignments. According to New York Times, Associated Deputy Secretary Jim Kaysen was behind a bunch of reassignments. Emails were sent to affected employees between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. on Thursday, June 15th, the paper said, informing them of their new posts. Among those affected were Mike Black, the Acting Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, Weldon Bruce Loudermilk, the Director of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They learned of their reassignments after spending a week defending the new administration during the mid-year session of the National Congress of American Indians in Connecticut, despite lacking key information about a pending reorganization of their high-profile initiatives. Kaysen was there having spent 2 days at the conference hearing concerns about the Trump team's direction when it comes to tribal matters, but he gave no hint of his forthcoming action when he left the Mohegan Reservation on that Wednesday afternoon and returned to D.C. Despite the reassignment, Black has remained in the acting position at the BIA. President Donald Trump has yet to nominate someone for the assistant secretary job, something his two predecessors had already accomplished by this time in their first terms in office. So far, the only two interior officials who have been confirmed by Senate are Secretary Ryan Zinke, who started work March 1st, and Deputy Secretary David Bernhardt, who was just approved recently. Kaysen, in contrast, serves in a political post that does not require a Senate confirmation. Prior to Bernhardt's arrival, he served as Zinke's acting deputy, giving him broad authority over the department. Black, who is a citizen of the Oglala Sioux tribe, and Loudermilk, who is a citizen of the Fort Peck tribes, are career, not political employees. They are part of the senior executive service program within the federal government, and it's common for these executives to be shifted around to different positions. Deborah L. Dumontier, who's serving as the acting special trustee for American Indians, also was reassigned. She is affiliated with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, according to her biography. So we'll see if this will affect our Department of Interior through our, you know, Bureau of Indian Affairs. All right. Well, some sad news out of Oklahoma. The first tribal college in Oklahoma is shutting down at the end of the month. Leaders of the Comanche Nation announced the closure of the Comanche Nation College last week. In a notice posted on Facebook, Chairman William Nelson said no employees are being fired because the tribe plans to continue using the building for educational purposes. According to news reports, the closure wasn't unexpected. Tribal leaders removed the college funding from their budget in April, KWSO reported, amid concerns about a lack of accreditation. But that doesn't make it any easier for tribal citizens, including past graduates. They said the closure will hurt future generations of students. Quote, you are taking away their ability to learn about Native culture and religion and values that come with it, Chelsea Yakayoni, who graduated from college last year, told KWSO. The college opened in 2002, but it never secured accreditation. The process can be slow-moving. God, that's terrible. I felt really bad that they're no longer a tribal college, but the accreditation process is really difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really have to have all that documentation for every single program and class that you're teaching. And people don't realize like how difficult the process is. I mean, it's like when you say, oh, we're going through accreditation, it's like, yeah, it's a lot. Like, you have to have minutes, you have to have, you know, reports. Ugh. It's a process.
Yeah. No, I remember hearing about it. And, you know, Haskell, luckily they've, you know, come through sometimes last minute. But, you know, it is a very long
process. A lot of people don't realize that. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize, like, this is accreditation means that your degree means something.
Right.
And a lot of people just don't realize that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, sad news for the Comanche Nation. All right. Well, some other news from the Trump administration and a victory for a handful of energy producing tribes. The Trump administration is planning to rescind a rule that established hydraulic fracturing standards in Indian country. A notice sent to the Federal Register announces the proposed withdrawal of the controversial 2015 fracking regulation. Tribes complained it was imposed without their consent, and a federal judge eventually ruled that the Bureau of Land Management lacked the authority to subject Indian lands to the standards. The BLM now believes that the appropriate framework for mitigating these impacts exists through state regulations, through tribal exercise of sovereignty, and through BLM's own pre-existing regulations and authorities. The forthcoming notice, which will be published in the Federal Register, reads, as the document states, a number of tribes already follow their own gas fracking standards. The Obama administration reached a settlement last year that recognized the Southern Ute tribe as the primary regulator of the practice on its reservation in Colorado. The Ute tribe, whose reservation is located in neighboring Utah, also challenged the rule in federal court. The lawsuit resulted in a 2016 ruling which said the BLM did not have authority to impose the standards under federal laws that were written to address energy development in Indian country. The withdrawal of the rule will not affect other tribes whose governments have banned fracking on their lands. Activists consider the practice to be dangerous to the environment, especially water resources, and they say it contributes to high rates of violence against women and girls because energy development tends to attract outsiders to their communities. Delegates of the Navajo Nation Council have been holding hearings to consider whether the Navajo Nation should establish new laws or policies affecting fracking. Environmental activists and medicine men and women on the reservation, which is the largest in the United States, are urging the tribe to outlaw the practice. Public comments will be accepted on the withdrawal of the fracking rule for 60 days. The standard affects federal lands in addition to Indian lands. Well, a new report came out stating Native women suffer from the second highest homicide rate in the United States, according to the first report of its kind. Between 2003 and 2014, 240 American Indian and Alaska Native women were victims of homicide in 18 states, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. While the figure accounted for a small percentage of murders during that time, it translated to a rate of 4.3 per 100,000 population. The rate was surpassed by just one other racial or ethnic group, the CDC said on Friday, but just barely. Non-Hispanic, Black, and American Indian and Alaska Native women experienced the highest rates of homicide, 4.4 and 4.3 per 100,000 population, respectively, the report stated. The report also shows that most Native victims of homicide are young. According to the data, 36.3% were between the ages of 18 and 29. It confirmed what tribal advocates have been telling Congress for years before they secured the passage of the Violence Against Women Act in 2013. Nearly half, or 46.6% of Native victims, were murdered by an intimate partner, the CDC stated. Of intimate partner violence, 81.5% of Native victims were murdered by a current partner, while 12% were murdered by a past partner. Arguments, jealousy, and recent acts of violence preceded the homicide in two-thirds of the incidences, according to the report. Homicides occur in women of all ages and among all races, ethnicities, but young, racial, ethnic, minority women are disproportionately affected, the report stated. Over half of the female homicides for which circumstances were known were related to intimate partner violence. The report is the first with specific data on the prevalence of homicide for women of all racial and ethnic backgrounds, as well as the potential causes. Yet it only offers a glimpse of the problem. Between 2003 and 2014, just 18 states provided the information needed to show how many Native women were murdered within their borders. Of the states that participated in the National Violent Death Reporting System, a number are home to significant Native populations, including Alaska, California, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. But other important states like Montana and South Dakota, where high-profile cases of missing and murdered Native women have made the news, did not currently submit their data. The racial ethnic difference in female homicide underscore the importance of targeting prevention and intervention efforts to populations at disproportionately high risk, the report stated. Addressing violence will require an integrated response that considers the influence of larger community and societal factors that make violence more likely to occur. The CDC's report comes as Native women return to Capitol Hill to address another pressing issue. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is taking testimony this week on human trafficking, a situation where data was deemed inadequate as well. So that's just terrible, and your own state didn't even submit data, which probably is very high.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect South Dakota to actually submit anything on that. But yeah, it would probably be really high. I mean, we have the reservations on both sides of the state. We have the Sturgis rallies coming up soon, and there's a huge sex trafficking, occurrence that goes on there every year. So, I mean, Native women are subjected.
Definitely. And we've talked about that before, because I see all the motorcycles going up to South Dakota and in many years back and forth, seeing people going up there. And for myself as a woman, I would never go there by myself. Mm-hmm. Call me paranoid, but yeah. I wouldn't do that. I would be so scared mm-hmm. that something would happen to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just paranoia or what.
Yeah, I mean, you can be paranoid, but it's to be cautious too. You know, that 1 week, Sturgis becomes the largest city in the state of South Dakota, and you get people from all over the world, and so you never know who you're going to run into.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, crazy. All right. Well, there is a poll run by the USA Today about casinos, and guess who was number one for the casinos on this poll? Take a wild guess.
Donald Trump.
No.
Foxwoods.
Close. It was Mohegan Sun, which I was just saying. I was like, heck yeah, man, that place is awesome. I mean, I'm not a casino. I don't gamble. I mean, I'll gamble like $20. That's about it for me, but I'm not a big gambler. And so Mohegan Sun was number one. Second was Caesar's Palace in Vegas. Oh. Pechanga was in Temecula, California, was third. And then Foxwoods was seventh. And then I was really surprised. The Hard Rock Hotel Casino in Sioux City was number nine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was like, little tiny one. I'm like, okay. I just don't. Okay. And not even the Seminole tribes one's not in there.
Wow.
So I'm kind of surprised. But yeah, Mohegan Sun took first place in that poll. So interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, that's your news across Indian country. Letting you know, keeping you informed of what's going on out there. Like we said in the beginning, just doing a little tribute to our friend Nate Cleveland, who passed away this last Saturday. And you know, why I wasn't here last Sunday, and you know, just trying to work our way through this week, and it's just, I don't know, all the stuff going on too, and also. Maury's leaving, and he's leaving me.
I am. Yes.
Again, left me. This is the second time you've left me now.
Right. But this is for good. You know, I'm really going to miss Lawrence, the Kansas City area. But, you know, I've been called. I have family in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time. I've been up in Kansas, you know, for years. And, you know, I think it's time.
All right. Well, we're going to play another song for Nate. And this was Radmila Cody with Herman Cody. And this one is called They Care For Me. And so we just want to play this in remembrance of our friend Nate Cleveland.
Hey, hey, young, hey, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, hey, young, di shin, ma, san, it, echo, de, be, be, ba, shako, ne, hi, yo, kat, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, di ga shi che ga a te go, ken it sa sha I li go, ne jon go ben a sha, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, diga shinale asa at ego, et ne jone go sha I thigo, ne jone go benasha, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, di shinale astine tego, simbits ato behosh ako, ne jone go benasha, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, yahi, yahi, yo, hi, ya, hey, young, che awe ka ta shni ko ayo ka ta shni ko nas ko pe shi yo ka yahi yahi yo hi ya hey young a yahi yahi yo hi ya yahi yahi yo hi ya yahi yahi yo hi ya hey young a yahi yahi yo hi ya yahi yahi yo hi ya yahi yahi yo hi ya hey young way young a
Hey! KKFI Crossroads Music Fest is here again. Saturday, September 9th in Kansas City's Crossroads Arts District. Over 35 bands on 9 stages. Tickets are on sale now for just $20. The festival is a diverse slice of the music scene in the area. This year's artists include The Fantastics, Enrique Chi of Making Movies, Javier Mendoza, Crystal Rose, Barclay Martin, Duncan Burnett and Riot, Sarah Morgan, Kelly Hunt, Mundo Nuevo, Kyle Reed, Instant Karma, Hot Club KC, and many more. Saturday, September 9th, the Crossroads Music Fest, a benefit for KKFI. Tickets and more info are available at cmfkc.com.
All right, you've been listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And my name is Rhonda. I'm about ready to be getting out of here, and Sunset Reggae will be coming up for you next. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And you just listen to Blackfoot Confederacy, Offner Elder's Vision, and we'll be leaving off with some Kevin Yazzie and Native American Church song. So hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Again, thank you to Maury here. Say goodbye, Maury.
Thank you for having me. Goodbye, yes. Kansas City. I'm sure I'll visit, but take care of each other and always listen to KKFI with Rhonda.
You'll be informed. I'm sure we'll have you back again on the line.
Yeah, you can call me anytime.
I know. I was like, our all spokesperson for the Lakota Nation. Do Lakota people all live in teepees?
Yes.
Do they all? Just kidding. All right. Well, we're leaving you off with some Kevin Yazzie. Everybody have a wonderful week, and I'll see you again next Sunday.
Yo, one day, you don't know. Jai 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 Jai